Yes, you are. It's the John Curley, Sherry Alico Show. Sherry out today. Greg Cobbledon. There he is. Show always has sort of an air of, I don't know, graduate students sitting around talking about philosophy and...
Graduate student? Professor.
Yes. I at the knee of the professor. Diving in the professor.
My bathing suit fell off in the splash there, so...
Awkward.
Right. Sorry, guys.
Wow. You're wearing like this giant one piece in the 1920s.
Giant. All right.
Getting into the news.
Right out of the chute with the fat jokes. It's going to be a long
right,
show.
Write that one down. One personal shot at him. All right. Let's see. There's three hotels, Motel 6s. They're located in Seattle, facing federal sex trafficking laws. And who's going to do some heavy lifting for us? Which great news organization? Cairo 7 explains what's happening. I'll tell you what's happening on the backside of it. Here we go.
Now been named in a federal lawsuit, accused of turning a blind eye to sex trafficking on site. Cairo 7's Samantha Lomibao learned the survivor in this case claims that abuse went on for years inside the rooms.
All the signs were there, all the red flags were there, and they did nothing to stop it.
Attorney Katie Amas is speaking on behalf of a Botha woman who claims what happened behind closed doors at this Motel 6 was no secret to its staff.
Our survivor, our client, continued to suffer because of it, and continued to be trafficked because of their greed and them wanting to make a profit off of it.
In a federal lawsuit against three Motel 6 locations, two located in SeaTac and one in Seattle, the plaintiff claimed her, quote, traffickers rented out rooms to imprison and traffic her and others at the subject Motel 6 locations so often that employees were friendly, accommodating, and on a first-name basis with her trafficker.
And these hotels and motels know what's going on. They know that they're being trafficked. They know this isn't consensual prostitution, and they're allowing it to go on.
The lawsuit also names controversial website Backpage and software company Salesforce for allegedly facilitating sex trafficking on several occasions.
Backpage was a social media site that facilitated a lot of the advertisements that our client's trafficker put out there.
All right. So a couple things to take issue with. So the plaintiff is saying that they knew that this woman was being trafficked, right? The difference is consensual or non-consensual. I don't know how they were supposed to tell the difference. The fact that this is the oldest profession in the world. And can you tell, do the people at Motel 6 know whether that person is engaging in that act of sex for money consensually, or are they being forced into it? I don't know how they are supposed to tell the difference between those two.
According to
Washington,
they're
also responsible for the behavior. Yes, are they responsible for the behavior of the people that come in there? If they don't see the crime happening?
Isn't consensual prostitution still illegal, though, in the state of Washington? Whether it's sex trafficking or two consenting adults paying, the act of paying for sex is still illegal.
Right. It is, but you do sort of have this blunt. You all of a sudden go, okay, if it's consensual, yes, it's illegal. You look the other way. But then they could say, well, the person is being victimized, right? They're drugged. They're not there under their own fruition. They're not there because it's their choice. Then they're being dragged in there and they're being raped, right? It gets into this difference between the person. Personally, I believe that they should legalize it. You'd do much better off if you legalize prostitution, because then you could control it and it's much safer. And then you wouldn't have these problems. She's suing not only the Motel 6, but Backpage. Backpage has actually won numerous times in court. When they bring them in there, they say, well, First Amendment, you know what? You can print what you want. Plus, under the Section 230, which means you can't hold Backpage responsible for stuff that's being put up there. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, they get that same thing that the rest of the internet gets, that I'm not responsible. You can't sue us. That's that 230 rule that they put in the early 1990s to protect the growing, you know, at that point, sort of the infancy of the internet. So Backpage has won numerous times. The judge is saying, look, that's First Amendment. Judge, the state can't come in and tell them what to print. And also, you know, they're protected. So.
Well, and I'm reading here that Backpage was actually seized and shut down by the U.S. government in 2018. So not these allegations must be from a while back.
Yeah, and I guess the question is hear no evil, see no evil a crime? And then at what point do you actually know the illegal activity is taking place? You know, and every once in a while you wonder, is an establishment's reputation well-deserved? If you're being honest, John, were you shocked when you first read this story about this type of activity going on at various Motel 6s in the area? I mean, my wife and I will occasionally take road trips north, south, east, west around Washington State. And when you get 2 hours out of the Big City, you'll see these, you know, little motels along the highway that have the signs that say $49 a night or something. And I'll always quip to my wife, hey, you want to pull over? And she knows what I mean by that. And so, you know, I feel bad for any upstanding citizen who owns a motel in this day and age. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these places have reputations for transactional, transitory activities.
Right. You're renting for an hour. That's always the joke. It gets into this. Did the plaintiff in this particular case, was in some way, was she compliant? Did she go into that hotel room knowing what was going to occur? Was she in her right mind? Was she drugged in some way? Was it consensual? If it was consensual to go in there knowing I'm going to exchange this for that, then why are you suing Motel 6 and saying, well, Motel 6 should have stepped in and stopped this or helped me somehow? That's the sticking point.
What's
for them
the culpability?
Right. If you see somebody, they're unconscious, they're being dragged in there and thrown into this room, and all of a sudden Motel 6 is hearing screams and stuff like that, well, then, of course, they have to call the police. They don't have to, but it'd be a good idea to call the police. Think of all the crimes that happen in the buildings that the city of Seattle owns up in Capitol Hill where the homeless people are. They've sticking them all in there, a lot of drugs and prostitution happening all the time. But in this case, the woman has decided, you know, good luck to her. We'll see if she wins. She's going to sue Motel 6 and, you know, sue Backpage or Salesforce on this.
Well, and so. The heart of the matter that which you're getting to there extends beyond the real world and into the digital realm. And this is a bit of a tangent, but not really. And that the big tech giants were just paraded in front of Congress not so long ago and accused of allowing illegal activities to run rampant on their platforms, large in part involving sex crimes and in particular minors. So it's okay. Yes, we have a platform that in itself is amoral, but is the provider of that platform culpable for nefarious activities that take part on them? So this is kind of an ongoing debate that we have in society right now in various spheres and sectors.
Right, because the 230 rule protects them. And basically it was, I think, 1994, 97, somewhere in there. It might have been right in there. They said, you know what, we're going to hold these guys. You can't sue them, because they realized if Facebook puts something up and somebody doesn't like what they put up for slander or libel or in some way go after them, they realize, oh, these guys would just go out of business immediately. So let's kind of give them this shield that protects the internet from lawsuits so it can get going. And now people have been claiming, hey, let's get rid of the 230 because you've had Facebook and Twitter and others that are taking down people, banning people, shadow banning people. They said don't give them that protection if they're able to sort of be used by the federal government as proxies to stop somebody's First Amendment rights. That has been proven in the case in Missouri. And you have scientists, Jay Bhattacharya, evidence the fact that they stopped him from presenting his own points of view regarding COVID and vaccines. So they, Holly and others are saying, you know, get rid of 230, stop protecting these guys, and, you know, let's stop the federal government from using them as proxies. Again, I've always said that if you legalize it, we went to Thailand and did a story in Thailand about the prostitution there. And it's simply the woman's got a card and every 30 days or something, she has to get checked out by a doctor to get the card to be renewed. The card is handed into the hotel owner. The hotel owner takes the card, has evidence that the woman is in here using their facilities for the transaction of, sex for or nookie for money.
Nookie.
And it's all, everybody knows about it. So you don't have the disease, you don't have the crime, and the government actually ends up taxing the exchange. So Are you against the idea? You against the idea of legalized prostitution?
I am against. Wait, how did you phrase that? The umbrella for this conversation is the notion of safety versus freedom. And that's an ongoing, robust debate that needs to be had in this country. And there will always be a healthy tension there. I'm not sure it necessarily will ever be settled, because a lot of times the more safety and protections and guidelines you put in place, then you start to restrict freedom. And which one is the more inherently good value?
Let me test you. Here we go. Right. So then what's the famous quote about security and freedom? Go ahead. You'll know it.
The famous quote about security and freedom.
You got to know it. Yes. Go ahead.
Freedom isn't free. It costs a hefty bleeping fee. And if you don't throw in your bucko five, who will? Is that it?
No. For those that give up freedom for security, end up having neither.
Good one.
I think it's Jefferson.
Here we go. Ben Franklin. Jefferson.
Fact checker.
Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Okay, so and it sounds good, and it's wondrously poetic and all that kind of stuff. But bring it down to the earth level for a second here and talk about something like a seatbelt law, John. I know we started with illegal sex activities taking place in motels, but let's boil it down to, do you think a seatbelt law has increased safety, and at what cost? Is it technically restricting a person's freedom? Well, yeah, in essence, because you're not able to do what you want in your car without getting a $150 fine or whatever it is. And at the same time, it's saved a lot of lives. Like, the data shows that once that was implemented as a law. So you are restricting freedom there. As good as the quote sounds and as articulate and eloquent as it is, in a practical sense, I mean, you're constantly making these calculations from a legislating point of view.
That seatbelt law was designed by the federal government to force. There's a crazy great story behind that as to what they were doing with the cars and what the federal government wanted auto manufacturers to do. So, Do we need the tin hat law for this one? No. Okay. You don't need to get into it right now. It's just too complicated. But why they decided to compromise and said, okay, then you have to enforce the seatbelt, the way the automakers came up. Better example is helmets on motorcycles. If you fall off a motorcycle while you're riding and you don't have a helmet, your chances,
Dunzo.
I mean, you're done, right? But there are states that you don't have to wear a helmet. I think Pennsylvania is one of them. There's other ones. Maybe it's Idaho. I remember going into Idaho, riding my motorcycle, going over to Sturgis. First thing everybody did, as soon as they got into the state, they took the helmet off and put it on the back of the bike so you could ride down that highway.
Whee!
It's your choice as to whether or not you want to die. Then you say, well, does the society bear some responsibility if you are on the sidewalk and you're smashed your head in, and now you're going to take up $2 or $3 million worth of ICU treatment, and society has to pay for that? I understand, but you know, in this case, that's a sort of case that society bears the cost of your stupidity. The same thing occurs when you eat hamburgers every single day. You're basically doing bad things to your body, and society has to pay for that.
Don't bring
that's
me into this.
It's under. I didn't bring you in. I didn't say hamburger and French fries. I just said hamburgers. Yeah,
with the
but that's always
French
the case
sauce.
Of freedom.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the same thing with drugs. If you want to take a drug, it's your body. You can do whatever you want to it. Why society step in and tell you what you can and can't do? A true libertarian point of view. And always the test of people say, well, I'm a libertarian. Okay, let me give you a scenario. You ready? There's a guy standing on a bridge. You are 4 feet away, 2 feet away, and there's no way he can pull you over. And he's about to jump off the bridge. You ask him why. He tells you why. And as he goes to bend his knees to throw himself over the bridge, do you reach out and grab him and hold him by the belt buckle, knowing you will not be pulled over? Now, that's a libertarian, most extreme test. And the person says, yes, I am a libertarian. And you say, okay, as the guy goes to jump, do you reach out to save him? Because if you do, you're violating that man's authentic integrity and his decision, what he wants to do with his life. Who are you to overrule him and say, well, your choice is irrational and my choice is rational, so therefore I'll stop you? But very few people will stand by and watch somebody just hurl themselves off a building without the sort of innate sense to want to save them.
That was so detailed. All right, you've beaten me into submission.
I can see the high ground.
You know what? I think the beard you're growing is libertarian. How about that? Are you going to go full Santa Claus with that thing? What's with the rim shots that Brady keeps playing every 2 minutes over here?
I think this is purely ego. Here's what happened, right, Joe? This guy came to the barn to book the barn for his daughter's wedding. And my wife went after he left. Oh, my. She's on the weekend and he's, oh, my God, that guy is so sexy. Oh, his beard is so sexy. Oh. And then she went out to dinner with friends. So she's showing pictures of trying to find the guy on Facebook. Can't find him. But they find all these other pictures of guys with great beards. And all these women are like, ugh. So at that point, I'm like, you know what? I'll grow a beard. I'll hang in there with the rest of them. I'm going to shave it off tomorrow. No, but it's like, you know, there you go. Yeah.
It looks spectacular. Yeah. But I think you're just trolling me because when I grow facial hair, it comes in patchy. So
no,
I think
you can
it's
go
an
to
own.
Probably advancedhair.com and they can fix that for you. There you go. There's some. You've already gotten three rim shots. By the way, stories to talk about because you do have some hot takes on Taylor Swift's lyrics.
Oh my gosh.
We'll get to that.
Can't wait.
You have a problem with that?
Really? No, I don't have a problem with it. I'm looking forward to it. In fact, that's the topic I got most excited about today. People know that her double album just dropped, and it's not just music. It's a movement, the Taylor Swift phenomenon, John Curley. And I'm going to take a radically countercultural point of view on this one.
Okay. So, and I have a question. This is not in the show rundown, but it was at the top of the news about that possible shooting. The kid that got caught in Maryland had a 120-page manifesto, wanted to just go in and kill a bunch of little kids. He says they're easier targets. No one will be able to knock me down. Is it important that we know a little bit more about that possible shooter and what that person wanted to do? They're holding back one piece of information. Is it relevant or not relevant to the story? And why did they not tell you that one additional piece of information? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
You're listening to the John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show. Good for you, everybody. Don't forget, know-it-all quiz coming up today at 5:30. All you got to do is text Joe one interesting thing about yourself. 1-888-973-5476. And who knows? You could be playing the know-it-all quiz for a whole teeny, whole box of beat me. Whoa. Whole box of bite me cookies. Teeny, how many cookies? How many? Teeny.
All the cookies.
There you go. All right. That's coming up at 5:30. How do you lose? Have you ever seen those rings, those Super Bowl rings? They're huge, especially if you're a big, big man. You got a great big ring. And so it was lost in a bowl of chili.
Yeah, this involved Jason Kelce, who is a former Super Bowl winner and brother of the much more famous Travis Kelce. Although they've leveled out a little bit, I think the two brothers have a podcast now that's very successful. They're able to get very big names on their show. So he lost it in a kiddie pool that was filled with a concoction of chili, spaghetti, and more during an obstacle course competition. He did add that the ring is... it has insurance, so he's already filed a claim for it. But doesn't that seem very on brand?
Children's pools filled with Skyline chili three ways was.
By the way, I listened to this podcast a couple times. It's edited, and the laughter is way too much. They're giving each other way too much credit for some of the stuff.
Absolutely disgusting.
Oh my God!
Mixed into that chili, there were socks with some make-believe rings, and then there's actually one real ring in there, which was my Super Bowl ring, but there was another kind of like replica Super Bowl ring. So there were two Super Bowl-esque rings that they had to try and find, one in each pool.
Oh no! What is happening?
So the first person to find the Super Bowl ring won, and it ended up being Team Academic. But there was an unfortunateness. As you guys know, this game existed because I continually lose my Super Bowl ring. And I don't even know if Travis still knows this. But I legitimately lost my Super Bowl ring in this event. They could not find it. This is Jets Jake and intern Brandon the next day searching through the chili to try and find the sock that had my Super Bowl ring in it. We have still yet to find it. All of this stuff has been thrown away, so I think we can safely assume that my Super Bowl ring is now in a landfill. someplace in the Cincinnati tri-state area. But they were
You're
throwing,
such an imbecile.
And there was so much calamity happening that at some point, the only thing I can think of is at some point the sock got kicked out of the three-way and it made its way out of the pool and that it was thrown away in some shape or form.
Okay.
Ain't that a shame? It. And those things run about 30 to 50 grand, I think, somewhere in that ballpark.
You want to hear an interesting bit of Seahawks trivia? Seahawks trivia?
Always.
So they win the Super Bowl. Then they have a big event. They've got the parade and everything. And then they brought all the players over to CenturyLink. And it was really cold.
I was there.
And I was there, too, sitting in the stands with my kid. And it was really cold. And the players were coming out there. And they fitted them for the rings right after they were on the field doing their, you know, and now say hello to Cam Chancellor. Mm-hmm. Right. They went into the locker room and then they sized them for the rings. Well, because the cold weather has a direct effect upon the size of your fingers, all of their or most of the rings they were fitted for did not fit them. Huh. Later on, when they got the rings, when their hands had returned back to sort of room temperature.
So did they have to get all new ones or just resize them?
No rings. I guess resize them or something.
I don't know how that works.
How about that? And by the way, wasn't that awful? The parade was great. And let's all go. I went to the stadium and I stood there with Rye and it was cold.
Oh, I was on the field.
When that sun went down.
Yeah. I was standing next to Dave Wyman. We were holding each other ever so gently for the warmth of our bodies. That's not true. He'd get mad at me for saying that. It must have been 19 or 20 degrees and the breeze that was flying through there is absolutely miserable. No, okay, but John,
they didn't seem to care about us. It was like we were there for 2 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, your Seahawks, your Super Bowl Seahawks will be out in just a moment.
Yeah, Marshawn felt like he was in Buffalo again during that ceremony. But here's my take on this story. If this ring from Travis Kelce is truly lost, I actually think it's good for people to lose something of value within reason every once in a while, John. Have you ever lost something or an item or an heirloom or something that cost a lot of money? And then
I lost an entire car.
A car? how did you lose a car?
I took Katie O'Brien to go see Annie in Philadelphia, a Broadway show. And for some reason, this is how powerful women are. She convinced me that I should get a pair of clogs. And this is important to the story. So we park quickly, race to the theater. I'm running in clogs. Why was I wearing clogs? Anyway, we come out and I can't remember where we parked because we parked so fast and we ran, couldn't find it. We're going to all these places and we're walking and my feet are getting giant weird blisters on them in the front of them. And then I finally said, we can't find it. It's too late. Let's just go. And we get a train, go back. And now I'm calling these parking garages and saying, are you like 7? Because I knew we parked like somewhere on the fifth floor or something. Are you like 7 stories high? No. It's like, so I call another one. And then I realized that we had 2 days later, I had parked in a place that had 4 underground spots. So that's why they weren't 7 stories high. It's trying to figure out where we had parked. And then finally I get the place and the guy goes, hey, we towed that car out of here. It's like a week later. And then I called the place that had the car and the guy goes, yeah, it's going to be like $65 every single day that it's been in here. It's going to be like $800 to get the car out. Forget it. It wasn't worth it. She just left it.
Wow. Us little
piece
people,
of crap. Old, it was old crap. No, it was a crappy Saab. I bought the thing and it had a crack in the engine block. So I had to carry like 6 big containers of water and constantly pouring water into them. It was so stupid. I'm going to pay to get the thing out of there. So, I lost a car.
Thinking how devastated I am to lose my wallet on occasion, and John loses a whole car. Forget about it. No biggie. I'll get another one.
It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth to get it out of there. It wasn't worth like $600 towing the thing out.
I have a question. Why the clogs? What was the motivation to
get it? Because a girl, listen, when you're a teenage boy, the girl can tell you to do stuff and you'll do anything. Like that woman that I was dating, that girl, and she goes, you look very effeminate. You'd be so much more attractive if you had a scar. And with that, she goes over to the drawer in her house where they have knives. I'll just make a little scar on your cheek. I was like, yikes. But as a guy, you're like, anything you want, whatever it is, if I can kiss you, you know. Yeah, I remember sitting there thinking,
I mean, don't you just think I get a scar? My bigger point is if you hold on to some things too tight, your mind starts to get warped into considering certain items or material things to be more important than they really should be on balance with other things in your life. So I think back to like a briefcase that I lost one time that had some valuables in it. I think back to a guitar that I had unceremoniously, someone threw it away and it tore me up for the longest time. But then when you get some distance from these things that you lose, you kind of wake up to the fact that, oh, you know, in the big picture, that wasn't really all that important, and I wouldn't have realized that had I not lost those things. Now, I'm not saying, like, I wish you go out and lose 20 grand or that wedding ring that was passed down three generations, but within reason, I think there is actually valuable lessons to be learned sometimes when you lose an item or something that's important to you.
We tend to imbue a whole bunch of emotions into material things, right?
Yeah.
And then they represent all those emotions. And you're right, there should be some distance in there because it's really not the material thing. It's the, you still have the memories of whatever it was. So,
sure.
You know, it's okay to let the ring go. Besides, you know what? I don't even buy, I don't believe that story from those two guys.
Yeah, we lost in a bowl full of chili. It's like a nursery rhyme or something. I think it's a shameless promotion
a kid's pool,
for their
please,
show.
Greg.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. Wow, people are being able to buy guns by going on to Tinder. So you're looking for like certain type of new friend who also has a gun.
Is that
how
the site
purchase
where
some
you
guns through Tinder?
Is that where you swipe right? Is that that app where you swipe?
Yep.
For people?
Oh, don't act like you don't know.
Oh, I honestly don't. But I was thinking, how
Tinder
does this
sort
work?
of all the dating apps, that one's kind of known for, you know, just hookups. So swipe right, swipe left. And I know people that travel a lot, and the first thing they do when they get to a new city is they get on Tinder and they start swiping right, swiping left. It's just it's a hookup app.
Okay, so then is this a thing
or Tinder
where people are holding weapons? And they have a Glock, and they're like, "That's not sexy." Swipe right. Oh, we got a Beretta. Okay. Oh, an AR. We got a titillating AR over here. And swipe left.
I don't know why they're going to Tinder to find this.
Yeah,
stuff.
How
do they
work?
Find it?
I don't understand this, but apparently, John.
I don't know. I'm hoping you were because I didn't read the story.
Okay. So, along with other social media apps, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, around 3.7% of guns from 2017 to 2021 were trafficked using that kind of a method. And federal officials have just been turned on to this fact, so they're obviously going to try to clamp down on it. I'm not sure how you would do that necessarily, but I don't know. Generally speaking, in a broad sense, I'm for allowing perfectly law-abiding citizens to be able to get weapons. But don't you think we need some kind of enhanced system on a number of fronts here, whether it's social media or private purchases and the like? Or do you disagree, John?
Is it as simple as the person on their Tinder profile picture is holding a gun? Is that what it is?
It doesn't get into too many details in the story. And I was head-scratching like you are with how this works out in the real world. But yeah.
Joe, you saw it. How are they? They're just holding up a picture of a gun and people go, oh,
Joe, you're learning. Doing.
They're not really trying to date anybody. They're just trying to buy the gun from the guy, right?
Yeah, there must be some kind of like secret hashtag or some way that you know that you're in the market or you're buying or selling. I don't know. It doesn't say how they actually, you know, how they actually find your weapons dealer on Tinder, but that's apparently his problem.
So do you know?
So let's make a couple assumptions about these people. They're buying the gun because they can't go to any other place to buy a gun because they can't pass a background check. So you can't stop them on these things. There's a crazy story about it. It was a gun buyback program. I think it was happening in California, maybe San Francisco or something. So there's a long line of people that are trading in their crappy broken guns for gift certificates. And a guy pulls up and he's like, he gets near someone near the back of the line. Line was really long. And he just went down the line and went, "What do you got?" They're like, "I got this. I'll buy that from you. I'll buy that from you. I'll buy that." So the guy ended up buying a bunch of guns, which is illegal. He was buying guns from people. What are they going to give you? They're going to give you a $50 gift certificate to Target. I'll give you $60 for that thing, cash right here. So the guy, because they set it up, there was basically a black market occurring right in front of the police as the guy was working down the other end of the line, buying guns from people and just offering more money. So the amazing thing is, here were these good Samaritans in line to sell their guns because they wanted to take the guns off the street. No, they didn't. They wanted the money. So when they wanted the money, when the guy offered more money than what the state or the city was offering, then the guns ended up in the hands of somebody else rather than in a big dumpster somewhere.
Look, there are some 400 million guns in circulation in the United States of America right now. And while I am an advocate for more enhanced background checks, for whatever that means, I don't think you're ever going to really curb the amount of gun violence in the country unless you have very uncomfortable conversations about values and raise a new generation differently than previous ones, because you're not going to round up all those guns and get rid of them, right? So it's more fundamental than just, hey, let's legislate our way out of this thing. We do one little thing here. I'll pull this switch over here. And then, wow, look at that. Gun violence just plummeted. It's not.
I have these arguments with people that are, reasonable gun laws or whatever. I said, so it's access to guns? That's the problem? Yes. I said it was easier to get a gun in the 60s until 1968 when Robert Kennedy was killed and Martin Luther King was killed. Then they passed a law. You couldn't buy guns through the mail because you could get guns. You get the back of a comic book. You open the back of the comic book. They had guns. You could send away for rifles. You could walk into an Army Navy store. You're 11 years old. Your dad signs for it. Pick any one of those guns out of that barrel over there. So it's not access. It's what has happened to society that people feel the need to get the gun and kill a bunch of people. It's a cultural problem, and you can't pass laws that affect culture. Right? Huh? Yeah. Am I right or wrong? Anybody?
Huh? Am I right or right?
Am I right or wrong? There you go. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you.